On this episode of Cox Talking Gamecocks, it is the state of the state, the state of the athletic department and major teams, featuring the Talk Cocky With Me podcast host, Brandon. He and I collabed on this one together, so hope y'all enjoy. Okay, here we go. Welcome to episode 74 of Cox Talking Gamecocks. I am your host, Tim Cox, and normally about this time I'm saying I keep every episode from 1801 to 2001, 18 minutes and 1 second to 20 minutes and 1 second, but not today, y'all, because this is a very special episode, the first episode of its kind for Cox Talking Gamecocks. I have collaborated with a fellow Gamecock podcaster, Brandon of the Talk Cocky With Me podcast, and we basically broke down a state of the state, a state of the athletic department, covering all of the major sports: baseball, basketball, women's basketball, football, and gave our takes, gave our thoughts on how the season went, on coaching decisions, on expectations for next year, and it was a good time. So it's a doozy, y'all. It's a long one. We got talking, and we were both very passionate Gamecock fans. We did have a few different points that we disagreed on, so you'll hear that a little bit where we go back and forth, but it's funny. He's an optimist by nature, wears the garnet glasses just like I do, so a lot of it we are in agreeance with, but I thought this would be a fun thing to do in the off season to allow y'all to get a different perspective as well. So buckle up. Like I said, it is a long one, so hope y'all got some time to kill this weekend. And just as an FYI, it was on Brandon's recording. He recorded it over Zoom, so he'll be the first voice you hear. Don't freak out. And if the quality is a little different, it's because it was over Zoom. Doing the best we can here, trying to ball out on a budget, but I hope y'all enjoy it. If this goes well, I could see myself doing some more of these with Brandon and other fellow podcasters out there. So it's going to be a good time, hopefully the first of many. So yeah, without further ado, here is the state of the state of South Carolina athletics with myself and Talk Cocky With Me.
What's going on, everybody? So today we have something a little different for you. Some of you may be hearing my voice thinking that's already different for you. So I am Brandon with Talk Cocky With Me, and am here with Tim Cox from Cox. Oh, you've got the funny one, Cox Gamecocks podcast.
You almost had it, man. Yeah. So Tim Cox, host of the Cox Talking Gamecocks podcast. It's a lot. It's a lot of Cox, man. What do you want me to say?
I was about to make a OnlyFans reference there, but we'll stay out of that. But,
if the podcasting game fails, maybe I'll turn to that out of desperation. But thanks for having me on, man. Yeah, really excited to be collabing with you, and thanks for setting this whole thing up.
Well, I didn't set it up. This was all your works. We're doing this together. It really kind of worked out. Tim had messaged me one day and asked me if I'd be interested in it. I explained him that is literally the entire point of my podcast is to have other Gamecocks on, and hence the name Talk Cocky With Me. For those that are Cox loyalist. That's the point of my podcast is to do that. So it worked out. We've been flirting with the idea that if this works out, we may do a few more down the road. So if you like it, definitely comment on our Twitters, whatever other social medias, which that's pretty much all that I use. I'm not sure about you. Do you have any other social medias that you really use?
Yeah, I guess I'll plug it now. Yeah, yep. For those of y'all who are Talk Cocky With Me loyalists, my Twitter is Cox Gamecocks, just my last name, COX Gamecocks. And then I am on the Instagram trying to build it up a little bit. It's just the name of my show, which is Cox Talking Gamecocks. But yeah, I mean, as Brandon said, the whole point of this is just to engage with more Gamecock fans. I think it's really cool what he has been doing, you know, getting the following that he has, and it's going to be really fun to share the state of the South Carolina program, our views on everything with y'all. So, yeah, really excited.
I'm not sure if it's going to be fun sharing it. Some of this will be fun. Some will be painful.
But that's what we do. Yeah. That's what we do.
So he just told it that this episode is just state of the state, kind of athletic department as a whole. And then we're going to hit on the big three, including women's basketball, since those are the major money earning programs for the university. So let's see, what were we doing? I guess we both kind of hit on our podcast what we're doing. So let's just jump right into it. What do you see as the overall state of the athletic department as a whole? You know, how are you feeling with where things are going?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because, you know, you can always say, like, in one breath, like, things are great, but then you can point to things that are not so good. But honestly, man, like, I'm feeling good. Like, I think the state of South Carolina athletics is good. I think we're in a good place from the sense of we have a lot of good things going for us. So, like, we can talk all day about the bureaucracy and red tape that is within the University of South Carolina, especially the athletic department, i.e. Board of Trustees, Ray Tanner, all that jazz. But, I mean, we just won a freaking national championship in women's basketball. The men's football program. The football program is on the up like we haven't really seen in many years past. And then, you know, from the other basketball team and the baseball team, like, yeah, there's certainly things that are to be desired. But overall, I think it's a good time to be a Gamecocks fan.
I agree. I think, and I know most fans don't agree. I don't think Ray Tanner has done a terrible job. sorry. So I'm still coming off of a sinus cold here, and that's why it's actually been a while since I've actually recorded. I've had a
you're just grinding, man. It's all good. You're just grinding.
It's been terrible. People as fans, and don't get me wrong, I 100% understand why people might have issues with Ray Tanner. But people have to understand it's not completely about the wins and losses for the three major programs in men's athletics. It's a full picture. And he still has a job because he makes the school money.
Mm-hmm.
And you can love him, hate him, say whatever you want to about coaching hires, the process, whatever you want. I can understand with a lot of it. He makes the university a lot of money, and he's really good at it. I'm not sure a board of trustees is going to fire a guy. And it's funny, I actually saw it was posted on Twitter earlier today, so I took a couple of notes from it. I don't know if you realize this. For the 2020 to 2021 year, this is a year coming straight out of COVID. You know, the world's people still aren't fully comfortable getting back into sports venues. You know, you still have a couple of people that were holding out and everything. There were definitely events that weren't packed out. Basketball team had next to nobody in attendance. Baseball team, you know, had some pretty good attendance last year, but it wasn't through the roof, you know, like we're used mm-hmm. to at a baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
We were number 9th. In the nation as a revenue generating athletic department.
Sheesh. That's nice. That SEC money for you, man.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too. So exactly that. We're 9th in the nation. Every single team above us is an SEC school except for Texas and Oklahoma, who magically will be in the SEC soon. But you got to take into consideration too, we lowered football tickets for Shane Beamer's first year. They did that whole promo of going back to the 2010 rates. Well, the last time that Beamer was here, let's be honest, a bunch of people dropped season tickets during COVID. And,
yeah. You
know, they were trying to get some funds back that way. But we were 9th in the nation as far as revenue generating athletic departments. You can be mad about the wins and losses between the stripes or on the hardwood or whatever sports you want to talk about. You have a top 10 revenue-generating program, it's going to be hard to get rid of that man.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. But it's so cool to see because that money pays for a lot of the things that we as fans enjoy, mm-hmm. i.e. facilities, and we like to brag about that. But also, there's some things that we as fans don't really see as much, like, isn't there the, what's it, the Doty academic building that's made for student-athletes? Mm-hmm. There's the 650 Lincoln dorms and things like that. So there are these little things that Ray Tanner has been a part of that are good for the athletic department.
Yeah.
I think what frustrates me as a fan is that it seems that in the high-pressure situations, such as coaching hires, he has tripped on himself multiple times. And it seems that there are times where he has given coaches a little more leeway than he should. Maybe that's a perfect segue for baseball, but that's where I think the frustration lies. I think he has done some good things, and it just stinks because it's almost a thankless job, right? Yeah. Where you can do some pretty good things, and it's like, oh, great job. Like, that's what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be winning. Yeah. But then when you fall on your face, you are the fall guy. Like, I'm not going to blame some random board of trustee guy. I'm going to blame Ray Tanner.
Exactly. And there's a couple of things that people don't realize, too, is so everybody was furious with the Will Muschamp hire to begin with because we wanted Tom Herman.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not dropping stuff or whatever, but I'm also not going to tell you how I have this. But I was actually in Ray Tanner's suite at the women's basketball game the day they went to pick up Will Muschamp.
Jeez.
There was a board of trustees member in there that I got talking with, and we talked the situation. Everybody in the world knew Tom Herman would leave the second Texas opened. During that conversation, he had mentioned he wanted during the negotiations of the contract. So he had, was interested in the position. He asked for a very low buyout rate. Tanner understood what that meant and refused to give it to him. So both parties walked. People hate Ray Tanner over that we didn't do, we didn't pull in Tom Herman. But you can go back and listen, too. Go back and watch the day that they introduced Will Muschamp as the head coach. Ray Tanner makes the comment, we wanted a guy that would be here for years, although that didn't work out. But he said, we want a guy that's going to be here for years, not just come until the next position opens.
Yep.
That was a direct shot. I'm not going to put words in Ray Tanner's mouth, but to me, that correlates with what I was told previously about the Tom Herman situation. And I'm not mad at that. It doesn't look good as a PC, or not PC, what PR, it doesn't look good in that sense, but if he was able to pick up and say, hey, he wants a really low buyout, that means he's jumping ship. I'm fine with him not hiring him. And you can hate the Will Muschamp hire as much as you want, but he left the roster in a much better position than Spurrier did. And, he brought in some guys. So, so let's kind of segue that into baseball.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, right move to keep Kingston.
Oh, well, for those of you who have not been listening to the show recently, I have dubbed Mark Kingston King's Dunn because I am done with him.
I've heard
it. It was a tough year, man. I mean, I don't really know what else to say. It just feels like guys have underdeveloped, guys have regularly underperformed, and there's questionable decisions throughout the year. Will Sanders not pitching on Fridays. I don't think we ever got a full explanation about that, except just speculation. Not putting your ace out on a Friday.
I actually heard on that one. I was listening to one of the ball games, and one of the announcers they kind of rotate a few times, and they had made the comment that during the season, Will had not gotten hurt, but this ended up not going on Friday kind of deal. And then they did that weird short week where we started on a Thursday, so he didn't have enough rest days. So then they moved him to – did they automatically move him to Sundays, or was it Saturdays first? Whichever it was, it just kind of threw it off. And then they decided to start adjusting it to where we didn't want to throw our ace against whoever we were playing ace And then you lose Will Sanders when we had so many injuries and everything, which is another point we'll be getting to. But it just kind of – see, I'm on both fence here. I understand throwing your best guy on Friday for the series, but at the same time, I also kind of understand throwing him on Sunday to give yourself a better chance of win when you don't have that many arms. You know, do you want your best guy going against their best guy, potentially losing because our team is up and down because of coaching? But then you kind of save him for Sunday, hopefully get that win on Saturday, steal the series on Sunday, which we should never have to worry about. I can play devil's advocate on both sides of it, but I think it was this thought literally just popped in my head. I think it was a little bit of a cowardice move, but strategic at the same time. Like I said, I'm 50-50 on it.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm not for or against it.
Yeah.
I look at it as strange. It is strange. I've never seen it happen before.
Exactly. Yeah. I remember when it first happened, I was like, okay, it's because he's on short rest. Makes sense. Fine.
But then it worked out.
Yeah. Then they left it. And, you know, you can see the logic. Like, okay, yeah, like we'll put Will against their Sunday guy. But, like, I think that's a bit of a defeatist mentality. Like, mm-hmm. you should go out there with your best. And the guys played well for him and Noah. Like, you noticed that the bats were better on those days because they're more locked in. So you've got to put your best foot forward on the first day of the series. You don't want to have to try to win it on a Sunday. So that was a big example of something where I was really turned off by Kingston. So to answer your question, no, I don't think it's the right move to keep him. I think it's okay to hold the baseball coach at USC to a higher standard than the rest, right? Maybe at another school.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at what Kingston's done in his tenure here and say, all right, give him another year. But I think from the standard that Ray Tanner has set, right, even, we are upper echelon in the nation.
We fired Holbrook at basically the same spot, the same – actually a little bit better win percentage. I think he's getting the extra year because of COVID. I really thought that 2020 team was looking really good out of the gate. And that's kind of how his last few seasons have gone. We've came out of the gate looking pretty good. You know, we swept Texas this year after getting swept by Clemson. And that's my frustration with Kingston is there's zero consistency with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's you come out, you sweep Texas, who is currently number one. And, well, I guess they've already been eliminated from Omaha, but went to the College World Series. But we swept them. And then you go out and lay an absolute pathetic goose egg against Clemson, who mm-hmm. just fired their coach because he didn't win. We got swept by them. And now we just went and recruited two of their players.
Three.
Oh, we got a third?
Yeah, we got one today.
It's just I liked him when we first brought him in. I played baseball my whole life growing up. I guess mm-hmm. I can't say that anymore now that I'm getting older. I liked him when he came in. I hate all the analytics stuff. Hate it. He seems to be getting away from that. But I think he's lost as a coach.
I could see that.
I think he came in, and I'm actually befuddled too, because he had number one recruiting classes at UCF.
Yeah.
But he can't seem to get anywhere close to that here. So I'm kind of lost on why that is. But he came in heavy analytics guy, launch angle, spin rates, all this. Then this year he comes out, we're not going to be doing launch angles. We're driving for contact. We're doing this. We're doing that. And there was one press conference before the season that really kind of sparked me was he made a comment of, I'm trying to change the way I coach to adapt, to do this. And at first I was like, okay, you know, that's a good coach that's adjusting to his players. But then the more I thought about it, I'm like, that's just him not knowing what to do. It comes off a little, I have no clue how to get these guys to play, so I'm going to completely change my approach to see if I can find something that works.
Yeah.
And it just, I'm to the point with him. I was actually, I was, me as a fan, I will scream and yell the entire game, every single game. That's my job as a fan. I don't care who the coach is, how much I like him, dislike him, who the players are. That's my job. I supported Will Muschamp until the middle of that last season. What was it, the LSU game?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was, whatever his last game was. And you could just see the guys didn't care anymore.
Yeah.
And when you can see that, and you could see it Spurrier's last season too, and people call him a quitter and everything, he knew what he was doing. Those guys had quit, and he knew it was time. Same thing with Muschamp is the guys just didn't want to play, whether for him anymore. And again, I'm not questioning anybody's commitment to the program or whatever, but they didn't have the fire that you saw in his first year, his first two seasons when we were winning 9 games and stuff. So as soon as that hit, I agreed with it. Kingston this year, I saw similar, but it's frustrating with him because there were times that you go, oh, well, if our pitchers didn't get injured so much, we would be competing right now.
Yeah.
So is it, we said the same thing with Muschamp with so many injuries.
Yeah.
Then Beamer comes in and we're not having those injuries. So is this a Kingston issue with these injuries all to our pitchers, all to their arms?
Yeah. I mean, something's got to give, right? And it was exactly that. It was like, well, we were one or two injuries away from like having some good pitching depth, good rotation.
Yeah, yeah.
But even so, you know, you saw a series where we were good. You know, what was that? It was Auburn, right? Late in the season, swept them.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, yeah, you're putting it together, but
and then crumbled.
Yeah, when you see that that up and down, like that's the guy driving the boat. Like that's a bad analogy, but like the point is, like, you got to have someone who is not so high and low. And that there was a couple quotes he had at the end of the year, which it just felt like he was regurgitating the same thing. Like, we've taken a gut punch here, we've taken a gut punch there. It's like,
yeah,
you got to shake something up, man. And you know, I don't know what needs to change, and I don't know what needs to happen to give me faith in him next year. I mean, I've talked to some people about this where trying to equate it to football, right? Where I believe that at a school like South Carolina, your minimum floor expectation year in and year out should be getting to a bowl game. Bare minimum.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the regionals to me. You got to get to the regionals at South Carolina. So like, by doing the bare minimum next year, does he deserve to keep his job? Like, it'd be weird to fire him maybe after a poor showing in the regionals, sure. But, like, it's got to be a hell of a year next year for me to be like, okay, yeah, he's put it together. It was just a whack year. So I don't know. Like, well, what do you think needs to happen to have faith in him coming back?
Well, and that's us as fans saying that. So you got to think of it, again, on the other side of the fence. If he goes to postseason play next year, he sits down with Ray Tanner and says, hey, we're showing progress now.
Yeah.
And
that's where I think a lot of the frustration with Tanner is. And again, he's got people to answer to as well. Mm-hmm. But like, I think because he's a coach, he's like, yeah, you're right. Like, I can see exactly what you're talking about here.
Yeah.
But sometimes you got to come at it with a more of a challenger mentality. And I think that's a little bit of the frustrating part.
Yeah. And like I said, I really like Coach Kingston when he first came in. So it's hard for me to give up on him. But the frustrating thing is seeing the Brennan Malones that when he came in as a freshman, I thought was going to be a freaking rock star at third base for us. I mean, he was crushing the ball, had a couple of injuries, transfer out, and he's like dominating at Oregon.
But yeah,
we couldn't find a spot on him at South Carolina. I mean, we had 3, 4, 5 guys that transferred out last year, year before or so, that just killed it this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the thing, too. I think you look at that and you go, wait, those guys were mediocre while they were here and or not happy. Whatever the situation was, they chose to leave. It wasn't that we... You know, it wasn't a situation like football where we brought in Spencer Rattler. You know, if Luke had came out and said, hey, you know, they got Spencer Rattler, I'm leaving, I think most people would be like, I guess I can kind of see that. You know, we didn't go in and bring in Chipper Jones to be our new third baseman, and Milan was like, all right, peace out.
Yeah.
It was he chose to leave the program and go crush it somewhere else. So when you start seeing guys, Burgess, I mean,
mm-hmm.
how does your starting catcher for what, the last two, three seasons? I can't remember what year.
He's good.
Yeah.
2 years.
I mean, he's been one of our best hitters in the lineup consistently the last few years when we haven't had anybody that could hit the ball, and he decides to leave. So I think you've got to look at a lot of that, and I think it's going to take a lot for Kingston to bring in. I think he's going to have to hit transfer portal, and obviously that's what he's doing. He's going to have to bring some people in because, to me, he is coaching for his life next season.
Oh, absolutely.
To me, bare minimum to where I wouldn't say cutthroat. I'm saying supers.
Yeah, supers are bust.
I think supers next year because there's so many teams that are allowed to get into regionals.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, you know, yeah, we had the great run and everything where we always hit regionals and everything. And yes, that should be bare minimum expectations every single year is to hit regionals. But I think you need to show significant improvements for next year, get to the supers. But it can't be we get to the supers like we did a few years ago and played Arkansas and got absolutely drugged. And it was obvious to everyone in the world that we had no business being there.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be, we make it to regionals at the bare minimum, win a game, and be competitive that entire series. to me, anything less, you're not seeing the program grow.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's baseball. Let's get into the hardwoods. These are going to be probably the quickest segments here because, yeah, what can we really say too much? but similar thing, do you agree with the firing of Frank Martin?
Yes, unequivocally, yes. And it's funny, you know, we talked about this off camera, but, you know, I feel like the majority of people were ready to move on from Frank. But I think that those who were in the minority were very loud and very vocal and did not want to leave him just yet. They wanted to give him one more year, get G.G. Jackson, see what you can do, right? This, that, yada, yada, yada. I don't want to stamp on a man's grave too much, but one tournament in 10 years at any school, you should be gone. Like, I'm sorry, that 1 year was incredible. No one's going to deny that. It was amazing. I was there for the Elite Eight and Sweet 16 games. Unbelievable.
Final Four.
Oh, jealous. Look at us. We put the whole run together.
Yep.
But I don't know, man. You know, I think it was time to move on. The program was stale. Free throw shooting was miserable year in and year out. And I just don't think a lot of guys want to play for a guy that's going to call them a mother effer on the sideline. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I know that's his coaching style. He's a good man. I don't think anybody's going to deny that. He was a nice fixture in the community. I don't think anybody's going to deny that. But it was time to move on. And I think a lot of people are nervous about moving backwards. Like, Frank, you knew what you were going to get. You were going to get maybe like 17 to 19 wins, be pretty competitive in the SEC, go about 500. But you're going to drop an inexplicable game or two, i.e. Coastal.
At least.
But you're going to be a tough out. Right. And you're going to be in the conversation. And that's what people were happy with. But they're afraid of that getting rid of him. You go backwards, which, yeah, that is a risk. But it's a risk I'm willing to take because guess what? If Lamont Paris completely fails the next 3 years, right, and we don't get anywhere, it's the same position we were in, man. Yeah. We're still on our couch. But that's my rant. I haven't talked about Frank Martin in a while, so I had to rant a little bit. But what do you think?
I think it was. And like you said, I completely understand why people wanted him to stay. He's a likable guy as a human.
Yep.
He teaches his guys how to be better men. That's what you want. I grew up with my dad as my head coach. He came from that old school. And I partly joked with people. I said, I don't have a little league jersey that doesn't have a knot in the front of where he didn't grab it and yank me off the field to yell at me if I did something wrong. That's partial joke, partial truth. I honestly don't know if I don't have a jersey that doesn't have that. But I grew up with that kind of thing. But I get kids today, it's different. And I think you have to learn to adjust. And people are going to hate this name the second I drop it, and you know, people mock him and everything. Coach K is that coach. Coach K is that hard-nosed coach. He'll cuss you out. He will ride your tail like there's no tomorrow. But Coach K was also similar to my dad, and why so many people that played for him absolutely love him. When you did something good, the very first person to be there is Coach K. If somebody made a great play, like if somebody screws up, he's going to be the very first person there, down your throat, chewing you up with all, 5'2" of his whole body. But he is going to get up in that rear, and you're going to know it instantly. But when you do something right, he's jumping on guys, falling to the ground. I mean, just doing crazy stuff. And that's what players want to play for. Martin never did that. When guys did something good, he would just stand there and like stare at them as they came back to the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you did something good. That's great. Like,
it just got old, man. It just got old.
You can be the hard-nosed guy, but you've got to reward the people when they get there. And people don't want to play for somebody that's just going to pound them, pound them, pound them, pound them, pound them. And when it first happened, the day it was announced, I'd actually jumped in a Twitter space or whatever it's called, and somebody made there was a former basketball player that played under him, and I'm not going to say names just in case, you know, whatever, although he did say it publicly. He was on that run, and he actually said, I think it's time for him to go to. So I think it was, and he always argued, oh, we're a bubble team, and we always got the raw end of the deal. Yeah, I think there were many years we got the raw end of the deal. We should have made the tournament. But you know what? Don't lose to Mary and Joseph, School of the Deaf and Blind every year. And you can make that argument.
Yeah, exactly.
We always lost to some high school team. What, we lost to Wyoming one year. I mean, we always lost to some scrub team at least twice a season. And then when it comes in time for the bubble, they're like, oh, well, we got shafted because we had like 400 wins, but we lost. It's like, well, don't lose those games. You have no business losing that game. No.
What did we have? Zero. Like, wasn't it 18 wins this year? Princeton and Coastal, that's 20. You're probably in.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the difference. And you don't get smoked in the first round of the SEC tournament. But, yeah, I don't know. I think we're in agreement that, you know, time came. You know, I don't know, but –
Do you like the Parrish hire so far?
I do. You know, it's a whole other can of worms, right, with the saga that was Sean Miller that never was. But I'm not going to go into that, right? We have who we have. I think when you look at his resume, there's no doubting it. I think that if he had taken Chattanooga, like let's just, in a land of make-believe, he stays at Chattanooga, right? We hired someone else. He takes Chattanooga to the tournament. And I think he's on everyone's radar.
Yep.
And then if he wins a game, he's hired immediately. So maybe we're ahead of the curve on this one. That's what I'm going to tell myself at least. But there's no doubting that he has the pedigree. He's been around winners, been around winning programs at Wisconsin. And maybe it's going to take a year or so. But it's going to be – if that happens, it's going to be hard. But I do like the hire.
What do you expect for year one?
Jeez.
To me, it's so hard.
Guys
transferring in, transferring out. But what – okay, not expectations. What do you want to see?
That's even tough. Like I don't want to say he has a pass, right, because the roster was gutted. But what I want to see
he's brought in some decent guys.
Yeah, he's brought in a couple, and he has room to grow, right? But – I want to see, like, just a different brand of basketball.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I want. I want to see guys hitting their free throws, taking smart shots. You know, he's not a running gun.
Can you please stop mentioning free throws? Because that is an extremely sore spot
PTSD.
For me.
PTSD.
It's not that hard. It's not that hard. You're standing there. Nobody's guarding you. Just flick your wrist. That's all you have to do.
Yeah.
Okay. I told you not to mention it.
I mean, but it's true. And when you look at Paris's teams, I mean, he's only had a couple as a head coach, but their offensive efficiency has been better than ours year in and year out. Mm-hmm. And the free throw shooting has been better than us year in and year out. So expectations, it's tough to put a number on it. I do kind of think it may be a step back of a year, which kind of sucks. But I want the eye test to pass.
Yep.
And it's going to be tough to stomach, right? Like covering the team next year, if we're in that, let's just say we win 15 games, right? Taking a step back, maybe not as competitive as we have been at times in the SEC, but hoping that it gets better for year two, that's going to be tough in the moment. But if the team looks better and it feels better, I'm gonna be happy with it, but I'm sure I'm gonna be eating my words come November of next year.
I'm right there with you. All I want to see is a consistent brand of basketball, good fundamental basketball that competes. And that was the thing. Again, I hate to keep harping on Martin, but everybody talks about, you know, the Final Four run. So my dad and I, we referee basketball, have for multiple decades. We were sitting in the arena. We're down, whatever it was. And we switched to a full-court press. Gonzaga could not handle it. We got turnover of turnover, got it back within 4 points.
Yeah, it was
whatever.
Close. Yeah,
got it within single digits. Within the last couple of minutes, and then we called it off. With just the last couple of minutes in it, and I'll never forget, the second they took the ball out, we dropped completely back. My dad turned to me and goes, "What are they doing?" And I'm sitting there going, "What are they doing?" We were literally just drumming them with this full court press, got it back into a ball game, and then dropped back, and they turned it back into double digits, and it was over. And you just sat there. I mean, you could literally see a coaching change just completely alter that game where you're like, come on. And that's all I'm looking for with Coach Parrish is I want to see a better brand of basketball, more consistent, and just be competitive. If you go out and you lose because we had a lot of guys transfer out, that's fine. But be competitive and run some plays that look like they have a chance for success whenever we get some better talent. Sorry, yeah. My dog's jumping on me right now. It's okay, bud.
Dog's getting all worked up talking about men's basketball.
He's like, stop it, Daddy. I know you're getting mad.
I understand. I'm right there.
We don't watch a whole lot of basketball in this house because our referee and everyone's like, oh, do you not watch? I'm like, no, I can't because they never call anything. So he hears me talking basketball and knows it gets my blood boiling. So for next year, I want to be competitive. It's going to be hard with guys that transferred out, but let's be honest, they lost a bunch of games. No, I don't feel sorry to say that because a lot of them trashed the fan base on their way out. Oh, y'all didn't ever come to show up. Well, maybe you should have won.
That's true.
Play better, more people come. If you don't feel that or understand that, look at the women. We packed that arena out for quote unquote a girl's sport. Y'all are a men's sport. We're supposed to pack it out for you, but you lost a bunch, so we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one thing that chapped me. I won't hold punches when it comes to that. You know, Javon Kinlaw, he was one that when he left, he commented a bunch of stuff on Twitter. Oh, yeah, those fans are terrible. You didn't win. And we're here paying a ton of money, $10 for a damn water, and you go out and screw the pooch, we're probably going to stay at home and sit in the air conditioner or the heat.
Amen.
I mean, sorry to be so blunt, but that's just how it is. And yeah, for next year, be competitive. That's it. Be competitive. From what I've heard of him, I like the change of pace. He seems to be nothing against it. He doesn't seem to be as rah rah as Coach Beamer.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not as I hate you and I hate life as Frank Martin. So, you know,
he just seems like a chill, mild mannered, middle of the road guy.
Yeah. He seems, from the little bit that they've showed, like from practice and stuff, he seems to be a very fundamental driven, very technician.
Yeah. Like coach. Wisconsin.
Yeah.
You know, like Bo Ryan.
Yeah. All right. Let me get my blood pressure down a little bit. Let's move on from basketball and free throws.
go pet your dog, man.
Yeah. I just sit in the bed real quick. He's fine.
An emotional support dog.
Yeah. Well, we have joked about getting him to do that. I've worked from home for like 5 years, so we're literally together all day long. He gets sick if I have to actually go out to run appointments for a few days in a row. But anyway, women's basketball. Let's tie them both together.
Okay.
Padone Staley, shatter the earth and be the men's basketball coach.
I always love this question, man. I love it. It's such a funny idea. Honestly, man, like, could Dawn do it? Yes. Like, she is a winner. She is a king maker, queen maker, dynasty maker. She could adopt the men's game, not a doubt in my mind. Now, should she? No. She has built an absolute powerhouse, a machine that is our women's basketball team. We are forever grateful for her, and she's just the GOAT. I mean, what else is there to say?
Mm-hmm. But I believe she's made comments before that she doesn't plan to coach long enough to, you know, run after the most wins and stuff. So I'm not sure what her plans are. I have to kind of think a little bit of how I've worded this because I don't want people to get all pissy and like, oh no, don't listen to him. She seems to be the type that likes to break ceilings.
Mm.
With a
trailblazer.
Yeah. And when you say stuff like this, you kind of have to caveat, like, I don't care about politics crap. But she seems to be the type that likes to be the head of the spear pushing the women's sports, which I 100% agree that women's sports should have a more publicity, you know, bigger light on them, whatever, spotlight, whatever you want to say. So I'm trying to put myself in her mindset. That's why I'm kind of saying those things. I don't know. And again, she's never commented on what she would do, but she did interview with the NBA a few years ago. I don't think she has any interest in going to the NBA again, just my opinion. But let's be honest, as a black female coach that's doing what she's doing, that's breaking the glass that she is, that's trailing the blaze that she is, or blazing the trail, there we go, words. Does she want to continue growing women's sports, women's basketball, which I really think that, you know, that Gino's great at UConn, but as far as women's sports is concerned, I actually personally like seeing the women coaches, you know, Pat Summitt at Tennessee. I think it actually brings up that whole sport a lot more having a female coach than a Gino. I don't know. It just kind of my personal opinion. I think that kind of helps the sport along a little bit more. I love watching the Women's College World Series about as much as I love the Men's College World Series. So I've never had an issue with women's versus men's sports. I think if it's a good product, people will watch it. My thing with women's basketball is – there's not a whole lot of parity in the sport. UConn did what they did because Geno came in, got really good, and then he took every single five-star there was in the nation every single year. Don Staley seems to be doing that at South Carolina, so we will gladly take it. But once in women's sports, it's not as level as the rest of it. So does she continue being that spear and driving women's sports to grow, or does she choose to jump? And again, I don't know that she will, but let's say hypothetically she chose to jump to the men's side, take over a men's basketball program to be the first black female woman coach to coach a men's basketball team and then see what she can do there. It's me personally and selfishly, I want her to win every single championship in the women's league as long as she wants to. And then after she's won like 30 straight, if she chose to jump over to men's basketball, say Lamont Parrish has won 30 straight men's national titles is where he decides to retire. And then Dawn decides to jump over to the men's. I'm perfectly fine with that. Let's take 30 straight national titles for men and women's basketball. I'll be fine with that. I won't be picky. We don't have to do 31. That works for me. Mm-hmm. But should she? It's going to be a personal pick for her. But it would be interesting. I think she would be successful.
It would be interesting to say the least. But I mean, as fun as it is to delve into what ifs and hypotheticals, let's talk about something tangible where the rubber meets the road. Let's talk about this team, your national champion, South Carolina Gamecocks women's team. What a year, man. What a year.
Yeah. It's, I hate to say it a few years, with Asia Wilson's championship team. When you look at that era, and of course, 20 years down the road, nobody's ever going to say, oh, well, they didn't beat UConn. But while we're in this time, they didn't beat UConn. And
I mean, this team was impressive, man. I mean,
this year's team, there was no doubt. There was no doubt who the best team in the nation was this season. Yeah. And I still think Asia, that team,
I think if that team had run into UConn in the championship game, I think they would have beat them.
Yeah. They were super hot.
Yeah.
I agree. I think they would have won. I think it would have been very, very close.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they would have won because you could see at that time UConn as a program was getting tired.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd actually made the comment during the one this year when we drug them, I said that was the passing of the torch. That was Geno and UConn passing the women's basketball juggernaut torch to Dawn Staley and the Gamecocks.
Yeah. Saying,
okay, it's yours now. Because I don't think he's long for this earth. I don't think Geno's about to die. I think he's probably retiring here very, very soon.
I agree.
So I think that was that. But I have to give props. I had a few people say it, but I made that post a couple of times on Twitter that I thought it was the passing of the torch. And a few people corrected me and said, no, that wasn't a passing of the torch. Dawn Staley walked up, ripped it out of his hand and said, it's mine now.
Oh, I love that. Absolutely love that. And you know what, man? Like, that's absolutely true. And just to bring it back to this year's team, like, they played with such tenacity,
mm-hmm.
game in and game out. They're putting out that little, I don't know if you want to call it a docuseries, but a docuseries on Twitter. Yeah. And I almost forgot that it started right away in game mm-hmm. one against NC State, a good NC State team. And like, credit where credit's due, that atmosphere was electric in, what's it, Raleigh? It was wild. And game in and game out, they rose up to the challenge. Dropped, that head scratcher against Mizzou. Yeah. But that happens, you're allowed to lose, not in the tournament, but, and it was just so impressive what this team did. And they had a mission because they would have won had it not been for COVID. And
Oh yeah.
And you, and then you come in and you have the Final Four heartbreak, you know, against Stanford, and they knew that they were meant to win. And like the seniors that were on the team, Destiny Henderson, they were locked in from the word go. And it felt like some of the role players got better in the tournament. It was really incredible to see. You know, I've always kept a pulse on the women's team, you know, would tune in for the bigger games, you know, would keep track of them on social media. But after starting the podcast, you know, I felt, you know, really kind of inclined. And like, I was watching the games differently across all sports, watching the games a little differently. And it was a fun team to watch, man. Like, I was so into it. Like, when we played Stanford at home in the regular season, like, that was about as into a game you'll find me on, like, what was, like, a Wednesday night. Like, jumping up and down in my, like, gym shorts and just, you know, cut-off T-shirt, getting ready for bed. And I was like, yo, F yes. Like, we are here. We're not going anywhere. So it was a fun year, man.
Well, and that was the thing, too. Like, with a National Player of the Year with Boston and Caitlin, whatever her name was. I can't remember, out of Iowa.
Yeah.
Alea Boston was obviously the best player this year. When she, anytime she wanted to, she dominated the game. Absolutely nothing against Caitlin. She is by far the, she might be the best pure shooter I've ever seen in women's basketball. And there's nothing taken away from her, and I completely understand their coach wanting to make the argument and everything, but Alea Boston, when she needed to, not that she ever didn't have it cranked up to 10, but when she needed to, it was like, okay, 15, and everybody's like, but we can only go to 4. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And she is on a complete other level. You know, she's going to have her statue outside of, you know, right beside Asia's. So, and I'd kind of joked on Twitter a few weeks ago. I'm like, since the WNBA starts right after the college basketball season ends, let's have a University of South Carolina Gamecocks professional, or I guess maybe don't call it university, but a South Carolina Gamecocks professional women's basketball team where only graduates from South Carolina can play on the team. And then I would absolutely love to see Destiny with Asia and Boston down low.
Oh, that'd be so
sick.
That
would just be nasty.
Yeah, like that. That's what the WNBA should make their all-star game. It should just be Gamecock alum
against anybody else
versus whoever you want. Yeah. Well, let me run this past you. So you mentioned a statue for Boston, which, you know, you give one to Asia for all her accolades and national champion, stands to reason, probably going to happen with Boston. But, you know, statues, you know, there's only so much real estate, right? What if we took a little bit of a different approach on it, and on the side of Colonial Life, you made a mural dedicated to Alea Boston? And there's this one picture, I think it was for Sports Illustrated, she took where she's whipping her hair back and it's all the blue hair. Like, that would be such a cool picture. You could even get like the British, not the British, the U.S. Virgin Islands, like in, you know, included in it somehow. I think that would be
so
very
kind of a
nice
play
touch
off the back-to-back title banner at, I still want to call it Carolina Park, Founders Park, or whatever the crap they're calling it these days, at the baseball stadium, the back-to-back, when you walk through it, the two banners for the back-to-back titles. Yeah. I think that's cool for now, but she's definitely getting a statue because that's kind of per their thing. I think it's National Player of the Year and then a few other accolades, but I think she's already hit most of them to get there.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I'm excited to see what this team has in store for next year, honestly. You know, you have huge pieces coming back, obviously Boston, but then you have Victoria Saxton. You know, you have a great recruiting class coming in. Camilla Cardoza, she's coming back. And they were all saying it. Like minutes after they won, they said, we're getting back here. That is that mentality that you love to see.
Well, and that's the thing, too. I was thinking earlier as we were talking, there's a lot of really good coaches in the women's basketball field right now. a lot of really, really good coaches. Dawn Staley's competitiveness is another level. It's, yeah. Excuse me. It's one of those that when she turns on, you're not friends. And don't. And I've never been around her during a basketball game, but to me, what she puts out is, don't talk to me. Don't make jokes. We're not here to joke. We're here for business. Let's go win, and then we'll have fun. And I've always said that. I played old man church softball years ago, and we got to the playoffs, and there were some high school kids on our team, and they were joking around in the dugout. And I looked at them and said, what are y'all doing?
Well, what? We're just goofing off. We're just having fun.
I said, we're in the playoffs.
Oh, we're just having fun.
I said, no. Winning's fun. I said, when we go out here and we win, then we have fun. Stop goofing off. Pay attention. Let's play.
Yeah.
And my wife says, she's like, you're the most competitive person I know. And I'm like, so? Because I don't – it was actually funny. I was commenting with Stone Blanton's dad earlier today. I thought he had made a little jab at Stone, but I think I read it wrong. I was out in 101-degree temperature, so I might have read that one incorrectly. But I thought he was kind of making a little jab at Stone about cooking. And I told him a story. The very last time my dad and I ever played one-on-one basketball in the backyard – was when I just outgrew him and he beat me by one. Barely beat me. He threw some little sky hook old school crap over me. But I had just grown taller than him. It was all he could do. He beat me by one. To this day we have never played again. Because he because he refuses to lose. When I play my wife in board games or Xbox or PlayStation, I refuse to lose. And she to this day, we've been married for 9 years together for 12 or so. To this day, in all of the like games and stuff we've played, she's beat me twice at a board game.
Mm.
That's it.
And I like how you kept the record too. Like you
oh, yeah.
the
oh,
exact
yeah.
number.
Like she'll sit there and say, she's like, I beat you. And I'm like, that's just twice in a decade. Like, that's not that great.
I'll take that record.
Yeah. So let's get to why everybody's listening. Let's get to the football program. Actually, y'all are listening because we are so freaking fantastic. And again, before we get here, Tim, this is fantastic. I'm thoroughly enjoying this, having a blast.
Yeah, having a blast.
So football, what does season two, a successful season, look like? Does Shane Beamer getting mayonnaise dumped on his head consist of a successful season two?
You know, it's funny. I mean, you know, the whole purpose that we're together, you know, is obviously we're reviewing the state of the South Carolina Athletics Department. And the reason why there is such optimism is just what we talked about with Dawn Staley winning a national championship. But then the huge piece being Shane Beamer and just the shift in attitude, mm-hmm. in the fans, in the community, in the team, just about the energy of the program. You know, I don't want to dwell in the past, but, you know, before he got here, you had a splintered fan base. You had a lot of negativity, and he has brought fans together in a way, in as quickly as a way that I did not think was possible. So kudos to Shane. Now going into year two, you know, I try to temper my expectations. I think being a Gamecock fan has done that. And
you've learned well, Grasshopper.
Yeah, I try not to get ahead of myself, right? So naturally the answer is you got to see progression. We got to 6 wins. It was incredible last year. You did it against all odds. So you'd like to think that you can get to 7-5 in the regular season and call that a success. So setting up for a possible 8 wins with the bowl game. To me, that should be the floor, right? If you were able to get 6 with Jason Brown, old man Zeb, and Luke on half a foot. Like, I would certainly like to think that we can get to 7 with Spencer Rattler. Now, to me, that's success. Like, that's my answer to the question. 7-5, going to a respectable bowl game, Music City, maybe go back to the Outback. That's success. Now, if you get 8 wins where I think that is doable, that is where you're kicking down the door and you're saying, hey, like, we are no joke in this program here.
I agree. And I don't know, kind of going back on one of the other things that you missed, I don't know if the fan base was so splintered before, and I'm not trying to contradict you or anything.
Embrace the bait, man. I'm here for it.
Well, I just don't know if as many people were excited.
And okay, that's fair.
And I'm not saying that bad for fans. I'm saying I don't know that we knew we could be excited.
Yeah.
Because historically, you know, like you said, we're up and down, up and down. Spurrier had us at an all-time high. Then he bowed out. People didn't like the hiring process, then didn't like Muschamp. Well, then he came in, and his first 3 years had actually did better than Spurrier's. So you had people like, okay, he's doing okay, but not getting excited for him. It was just, we don't suck. We're not great, but I still don't like it. I'm still not excited. I mean, he had some momentum. It was that UConn game. Something happened at halftime, that UConn bowl game. That's another podcast, but I don't know what that was, but something killed his program. But anyway, he was doing okay, but the feel around the program and the athletic department as a whole was completely different. And I don't know what Shane Beamer has. I'm in sales, so I wish he would tell me so I could, like, steal some of it and sprinkle it on people whenever I'm trying to sell to them.
Nice.
Because he just came in, and everybody loves him. But he's came in. He's brought in a staff. And it was so funny when he had first taken over. Everybody had left. He was cleaning the house. He was bringing his own people in. And, like, literally every single person on the planet was like, please keep Jessica Jackson. Please keep Jessica. Please keep Jessica.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, and it was one of those, like, she's a part of the family now. We can never absolutely. Get rid of her.
Absolutely.
But that whole staff has just created an environment that I don't know has ever been. Spurrier never had this. Like, there was such an excitement before last season. But you would have thought going into last season, we had Jadeveon Clowney with Connor Shaw and Marcus Lattimore and Alshon Jeffery about to run out on the field. And nobody correct me if, like, I got a couple years mixed in and all of them weren't on the same team. Go blow. But, you know, going into last year, that was kind of the excitement for the program was, hey, we don't suck again. Yay! And now coming into this season – it's even higher, you know. We laid the egg against Clemson, and you can't do that. Freaking kick the field goal.
Yeah, just I know.
Kick the field goal. Don't.
You got to take the sad field goal.
Kick the field goal and don't get shut out. But anyway, you know, we had that. Luckily, we had the bowl game and came out and just went gangbusters. Huge recruiting, huge transfer portal. Recruiting right now is out the wazoo. I mean, there is so much momentum for this program right now. I agree with you. 7-5 regular season, to me, feels like bare minimum.
Yeah.
I believe that was what you said as well.
Yeah.
8, it's so hard because me as a fan and me as excited as I am, I want to be like, we're going to win 15 games next year in a national title. But – Like we were saying earlier with the basketball team, I want to see us competitive. You can't go out. I think Georgia, you know, looking at it, Georgia's the toughest game on schedule. You can't go out against Georgia and get drugged. You just can't.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be
at home, nonetheless.
Yeah, you've got to be competitive in every single game. That's my bar none. Is be competitive.
It's funny. It's funny because you know. You, like, want to say, yeah, 8-4. But, like, we're so afraid to be like, can we, like, actually have a nice thing right now? Like, yeah. It's not a fluke. Like, you know, it's just like, oh, yeah, like, 7-5, I'll be happy. I'll be happy when, like, deep down it's like, come on, man. Like, 8-4, it's for the taking.
I firmly believe we have the talent in our starting lineup to compete with every single team on our schedule, which thus means we can compete with every single team in the nation. I truly believe we have that talent in our starting lineup. Do we have the depth that when it's in the fourth quarter, games on the line, that, you know, we can end up winning those games? I'm not sure. But I don't look at a single program out there right now and say our starting lineup is far, far below them.
Yeah. And, you know, I look at last year and I just like to think, you know, we're going to get into this in a second, I'm sure. But, like, there were a lot of games where people questioned the play calling, and there were a few games where, you know, the depth and the injuries caught up to us.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But I like to think of, in if everything was exactly the same, but you have Spencer Rattler under center, like everything is the exact same, same roster, just insert him and the same play calling. In my opinion, we beat Missouri and we beat Kentucky.
Yeah.
And right there, that's eight.
Yep.
So, like, you're telling me that with the improved roster and better depth and everybody in the second year.
Well, and we also don't give people heart attacks against Vandy.
Oh, my God. Yes. I am fully hoping for a curb stomping, fully expecting a curb stomping. I saw someone on Twitter, they're like, you can't sleep on this game here. Like, it isn't a funny place in the schedule where, like, it's coming after, I think, maybe A&M, but it's right around the corner is a big game. So it's, people are saying it's like, could be a pseudo trap game, but, like, I don't think so. I don't think Nashville is the most intimidating place to play. But assuming we curb stomp Vandy, it's just, I got to believe that the improved roster is just naturally going to bring something in. You know, you bring up a good point about depth, and I think certainly compared to last year, it's better.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I look at wide receiver as a prime example of that.
Uh-huh.
There is some depth issues though, you know, and I think that's the next iteration of a very good team, right?
Like, oh yeah,
I think we're moving towards like good to very good border, right? But then to get to very good and like stay there, that's where the depth comes in, and that takes time. That takes recruiting.
Yeah, and I think too. Depth is kind of my scapegoat. I'm using that. I'm using that as my excuse for why we might drop a game or two.
Yeah, that's fair.
I honestly, and it could just be my fandom in me, I'll admit, but I cannot look at a team on our schedule and go, that is a for sure loss. We have no chance in that game.
I love that, man. Like. I wear the garnet glasses big time. I am a optimist by nature. I still look at a couple of these games and I'm like, A&M.
And that's the thing too. We historically play terrible against A&M.
Yeah.
So it's one of those, I think we should be able to beat A&M. Will we is the different, you know, and that's my thing is when I look at it, I say, I feel like we have the talent to compete against them.
Yeah.
But then when you go down to the game, will you win? Well, I don't know. Heck if I know who's showing up that game.
Man, it is tough with them. Sorry, I cut you off. You go ahead.
No. And kind of going back to where you'd said if we had Spencer Rattler last year, it's two wins. That Vandy game, that's how I feel like our toughest game should be. You know, not Vandy.
Yeah.
You know, our Vandy game should not
make it
be
Georgia or someone.
Yeah. It should be a late fourth quarter. It's a touchdown game. You know, one team or the other has the ball late. They're either trying to ice it, we're trying to get the ball back, or we're trying to drive to score to maybe tie, maybe take lead or whatever.
Yeah.
That's how I look at the program. If you're wanting to get to the next level, because – we got to take into consideration, too, for recruiting. You're trying to sell these recruits. We're getting better. Mm-hmm. You go out, you know, we're recruiting against Clemson and we're recruiting against Georgia. You go out and get curb stomp against those guys. Any recruit that's 50-50, you're losing.
Yeah, it's tough. Well, now let me ask you, you know, you talk about, you know, progressing and everything like that. Give me a quick, where do you think we finish in the division?
Second or third?
Yeah. I mean, I'm right there with you. I'm going to say third. I don't know who's in second, but
yeah.
you know, I think third.
Georgia's the obvious favorite.
It's Georgia and everyone else in the East. I mean, that's just like unfortunate state of the East right now.
And us, Tennessee, Florida, kind of whoever decides to show up.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I could see Florida stinking this year, honestly. Yeah,
I think Florida is way overrated, but that's what the quote-unquote experts say.
Dude, it's all such lazy takes. All these preseason models having us finishing fifth in the division. You know, I saw some model that had us at projected 6.6 wins. That's just lazy. Like, you're just looking at the name, and then you're looking at our schedule, and you're saying, well, they play Georgia, Arkansas, A&M, Clemson. And it's like, yeah, that's very true. Boy, that doesn't mean that, like, we're going to lay eggs against all those. Now, let me ask you a different question here. There's a couple of streaks that we're hoping to buck this year, right? So I'm going to propose three to you.
Okay.
The losing streak against Tennessee, what's it, two or three? The ugliness we have against Kentucky, it's like we've lost, I don't even know how many out of how many.
It's like nine, isn't it?
Well,
Am I crazy? Am I off my rocker?
Well, no, it's not nine in a row because we did beat them, I think it was 2 years ago, three at home.
Yeah.
But they've beaten us like 15 out of 17 times, like something crazy. So that, and then I think we've lost three in a row against Mizzou. Give me the top one that you would like to see ended this year. Not to say the others can't happen, but give me the one that you're like, okay, this has to happen.
If you're going to take a step from bottom to middle bottom of the division, you have to beat Kentucky. And I realize Stoops has gotten Kentucky, you know, really, really well, but it's the same thing you just said about they're being lazy. They're just looking at our names and putting it in here. It's kind of the same thing. It's you have to beat Kentucky. To me, although Tennessee's kind of a little wavy lately, Missouri's even been kind of a little wavy. I guess technically all three of them have really been a little wavy in the last few years. Historically and visually, you have to beat Kentucky to get to that next step. Yeah. If I had to pick them in top to bottom, I'm saying you have to beat Kentucky first. Then you have to beat Missouri. Then you have to beat Tennessee. Which,
yeah, I mean, I can.
That kind of seems the rungs on the ladder to me. And again, it's just historically these are the teams of the East you have to beat.
Yeah, and that's what's so frustrating. I mean, I could talk for like honestly like a stupid amount of time about like Kentucky and like where we should be against them and things like that. But honestly, because I was asked this question by someone else, which is why I posed it to you. Honestly, my answer is Mizzou, and it's for your same exact reason. Is because if we want to move up, we absolutely cannot let this fake SEC team, barely an SEC team in Mizzou, beat us, let alone three times in a row. Like, if you want to be competitive with them, fine. There's a fun trophy on the line. That's a good time. But, like, there is no way, shape, or form you can move up in the world in the SEC if you can't handle Mizzou on the regular.
Yeah. You've convinced me. I'm switching my answer. I'm going Mizzou, too, because – I kept saying historically, I think Stoops has gotten Kentucky beyond Missouri.
Yeah.
I would agree in current ages, to me, Missouri is a lower tier than Kentucky, which hopefully the world does not end and we don't go into an apocalypse situation where we have to wear leather and studs and stuff. and we still have a... We're still able to travel and go to college football games because I'm really wanting to go or being able to afford to go to away games and stuff because I'm really wanting to go to Kentucky and hopefully do Vandy as well. But, to me, Kentucky has gotten a little bit higher up. And it's so funny. It's kind of like they've mirrored us when we did our run in the early 2010s. You know, they were coming in on winning streaks. We were coming in on winning streaks, and then we'd thump them. We're like, nope, you're not here. You're not here. We're above you. Get back down. Lately, it's been kind of the opposite, as much as it hurts to say that.
Yeah, but, I mean, at the end of the day, I think there's – every reason in the world to be optimistic heading into this football season. You know, it sounds like we're both on the same page where it's like cautiously optimistic. But I'm excited, man. And
so you're saying that I think we've both agreed that we're optimistic people. So who's your biggest upset?
Georgia.
Ooh.
Georgia at home at noon. Call it. How about you? What do you think?
I'm not saying Clemson for the simple fact of I think by the time that game comes around, it's not going to be that huge of an upset.
Okay.
Forecasting both of us. I'll go with you. I'm going Georgia.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I think we can beat Arkansas.
Yeah.
But you asked for biggest. So
yeah.
You know, I think the point spread is going to be a heck of a lot larger against Georgia, but yeah.
Absolutely. It's everything is shaping up. Again, we're 3 months away. What, 73 days away now as of recording. Yeah. So we still have plenty of time until it gets to that, but I love every single thing that's coming out of this program right now. And I know Georgia's going to be really, really good, but as Spurrier used to always say, although they haven't really had.
I know where you're going with it.
Yeah, they haven't really had those issues recently, but we like to play them early, so because you always got a couple of those guys going to be suspended. I like that we're catching them early. I like that we have a couple of – Georgia State's not going to be a pushover game, so it's going to be a pretty competitive game. Our guys are going to have to go out there and play well. Then we've got Arkansas, which, again, we're going to have to play well to win that game. So I like that we have a couple of games before them that's going to be tougher. And then we got them early in the day.
Absolutely. I'm right there with you.
So I think it really shapes up to where it's in our favor. And daggummit, my heart's racing now and I'm all excited.
I need it. I need it so bad.
I literally just clapped like a schoolgirl. I'm
can't
like
come soon enough.
Like, oh my gosh, it's football season. It's really not that close yet.
Can't come soon enough, man.
Yep. Well, dude, I think that's what we had.
That's it, man. I think the state of the athletic program is in a good place. State of football program is in a great place. This was a blast. I can definitely say this is going to be the first of many collabs.
Yeah. Agreed.
And all I'm going to say before signing off is go Cox, man.
Well, I always wrap mine up doing the demo. Go Gamecocks.
Yes, sir. All right, y'all. So I hope you enjoyed it. As I said in that episode, in that conversation there, I do think that the state of South Carolina athletics is strong. There is a lot of reason for optimism in some big-time programs. There is obviously possible change on the horizon with others, but overall, it is a great time to be a Gamecock. I'm so excited to see what this next season of athletics brings. I hope y'all have a great weekend. I appreciate all y'all. Make sure to like, subscribe, and review the podcast wherever you listen it to. Go Cocks.